Listen to this.
The most important stuff I've learned, I think I've learned from novels.
Do you hear and recognize that voice?
It has to do with empathy. It has to do with being comfortable with the notion that the world's complicated and full of grays, but there's still truth there to be found, and that you have to strive for that and work for that. And you know, the notion that it's possible to connect, they're very different from you.
President Barack Obama looking for truth and listening to it in a surprising place. Maybe that's why his voice sounds a little different. A room at the Iowa Public Library, where he sat down this past September with one of his favorite writers, Marilynne Robinson. The New York Review of Books recently published a two-part podcast of this long conversation between the commander-in-chief and one of his favorite writers. This week, I sat down with Marilynne Robinson to ask her about the experience of having the undivided attention of her commander-in-chief.
I'm pretty hard to dazzle. But his face is very communicative, you know, when you're simply talking to him. I know that when he has to do things in public, he takes on that role that anybody does, you know, of being the well-dressed man with the speech, you know. But when you're in conversation with him, and perhaps things change from moment to moment in ways that he will not anticipate and so on, he's very readable.
What do you think your responsibility is as a voter, as a citizen of the United States, with this window, this audience that you had with the president? What does it do to you as a voter? What does it encourage you to be? Anything at all? It's quite a privilege. I'm wondering if there's a responsibility that comes with it.
I really feel a great deal of responsibility, and I would like very much to speak for him in a way that I consider exactly right. But there's a little asperity in my nature that he does not have, and that's, you know, that's where I I think, and have to correct myself. And this is me, this is not him. His terms have been so much dominated by these bizarre suspicions that are, you know, that are circulated in major outlets and so on. I've known since before he was elected that he belonged to the same denomination that I do, religious denomination, that is, because he and I spoke at the same convention, and he wanted to come to my church. And this is before I knew him or before anybody thought he was going to win anything. You know, the implication that he was not honest about what he said about himself was a slander, and it became as important, I think, as any actual fact during that eight-year period. I think that we found out that our democracy can be substantially undercut by slander, and that the media have to correct themselves, confront themselves, because, you know, I mean, he was elected president twice by good margins. You know, I mean, for me, I've always felt that I understood him in a very deeply, because we do share the same theology. And to act as if it were somehow un-American or cryptic or furtive or something like that is just slander. There's no other word for it.
Is it possible that he is presiding over the beginning of the end of some epoch of white dominance in America, and that people's speech and their attitudes and their predisposition to slander is becoming a kind of Alamo moment for a group of people who will soon not be the majority?
You know, I don't know to what extent that's a real issue. I think a lot of things are said and done in this culture that factionalize it, you know? I mean, the assumption that groups are solid things with articulated senses of self-interest and so on, I don't know what that really describes. I think that, you know, this new evidence that there's a great deal of early mortality in middle-aged white people in this country, I think that probably correlates very strongly with things like the collapse of the labor unions, the collapse of industrial employment, the flatness of wages. I think that it's characteristic of people generally that in this country that they want to feel that they'll be able to help with their grandchild's tuition or whatever. And to undercut them, to make them not efficacious, I think is an extremely bitter blow to people. It would be to me. I'm, you know, granting I'm white and much more than middle-aged. But that's a terribly depressing situation to allow people to live in.
As a novelist with a real attention to detail, and noting this presupposition that writers sometimes talk about, that their record button is always on, how do you rank him as a character that might show up in some fictional piece of yours down the line? Or someone like him?
I'd have to give that a lot of thought. He likes the character John Ames in the novel Gilead. I think that character endeared my writing and myself, perhaps, to him many years ago. And I think that the desire to be gracious that is characteristic of that figure, to not get in the trench warfare among people that have, complaints against each other, but actually to step back and see the other person with a certain tenderness. I think that that's very characteristic of him, of Obama, that is. And, in all candor, I admire him more than anyone I've ever known, precisely for that quality. And it would be hard for me to write him as a character.
You are just a fangirl.
Well, it just feels good to admire somebody. I mean, just the sensation of respect which I have toward him, and which he enhances every time I have any dealings with him, it feels good. I'm enjoying it.
Marilynne Robinson, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Marilynne Robinson is an essayist and Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist. Head over to thetakeaway.org for a link to her transcript of her conversation with the president, which was published in the New York Review of Books.